Chapter 43. By Ulred, but it accords with his character too, and that is why it has been so successful. Haven't they come to calling him El Rey de Sulaco in Sta, Marta? A nickname may be the best record of a success. That's what I call putting the face of a joke upon the body of a truth. My dear sir, when I first arrived in Sta, Marta, I was struck by the way all those journalists, demagogues, members of Congress, and all those generals and judges cringed before a sleepy-eyed advocate without practice simply because he was the plenipotentiary of the Gould concession. Sir John, when he came out, was impressed too. A new state, with that plump dandy, decad, for the first president, mused Dr. Monaghan, nursing his cheek and swinging his legs all the time. Upon my word, and why not, the chief engineer retorted in an unexpectedly earnest and confidential voice. It was as if something subtle in the air of Costaguana had inoculated him with the local faith in renunciamientos. All at once he began to talk, like an expert revolutionist, of the instrument ready to hand in the intact army at Cata, which could be brought back in a few days to Sulaco, if only Decad managed to make his way at once down the coast. For the military chief there was Berrios, who had nothing but a bullet to expect from Montero, his former professional rival and bitter enemy. Berrios' concurrence was assured. As to his army, it had nothing to expect from Montero either, not even a month's pay. From that point of view, the existence of the treasure was of enormous importance. The mere knowledge that it had been saved from the Monterists would be a strong inducement for the Cata troops to embrace the cause of the new state. The doctor turned round and contemplated his companion for some time. This Decad, I see, is a persuasive young beggar, he remarked at last. And pray, is it for this, then, that Charles Gould has let the whole lot of ingots go out to sea in charge of that Nostromo? Charles Gould, said the engineer-in-chief, has said no more about his motive than usual. You know, he doesn't talk. But we all here know his motive, and he has only won the safety of the Santome mine with the preservation of the Gould concession in the spirit of his compact with Ulred. Ulred is another uncommon man. They understand each other's imaginative side. One is 30, the other nearly 60, and they have been made for each other. To be a millionaire, and such a millionaire as Ulred, is like being eternally young. The audacity of youth reckons upon what it fancies an unlimited time at its disposal, but a millionaire has unlimited means in his hand, which is better. One's time on earth is an uncertain quantity, but about the long reach of millions there is no doubt. The introduction of a pure form of Christianity into this continent is a dream for a youthful enthusiast, and I have been trying to explain to you why Ulred at 58 is like a man on the threshold of life, and better too. He's not a missionary, but the Santome mine holds just that for him. I assure you, in sober truth, that he could not manage to keep this out of a strictly business conference upon the finances of Costaguana he had with Sir John a couple of years ago. Sir John mentioned it with amazement in a letter he wrote to me here, from San Francisco, when on his way home. Upon my word, doctor, things seem to be worth nothing by what they are in themselves. I begin to believe that the only solid thing about them is the spiritual value which everyone discovers in his own form of activity, bah! Interrupted the doctor, without stopping for an instant the idle swinging movement of his legs. Elf flattery. Food for that vanity which makes the world go round. Meantime, what do you think is going to happen to the treasure floating about the gulf with the great capitas and the great politician? Why are you uneasy about it, doctor? I uneasy? And what the devil is it to me? I put no spiritual value into my desires, or my opinions, or my actions. They have not enough vastness to give me room for self-flattery. Look, for instance, I should certainly have liked to ease the last moments of that poor woman. And I can't. It's impossible. Have you met the impossible face? two-facer, have you? The Napoleon of railways. No such word in your dictionary. Is she bound to have a very bad time of it? Asked the chief engineer, with humane concern. Slow, heavy footsteps moved across the planks above the heavy hardwood beams of the kitchen. Then down the narrow opening of the staircase made in the thickness of the wall, and narrow enough to be defended by one man against 20 enemies, came the murmur of two voices, one faint and broken, the other deep and gentle answering it, and in its graver tone covering the weaker sound. The two men remained still and silent till the murmur ceased. Then the doctor shrugged his shoulders and muttered, "Yes, she's bound to. And I could do nothing if I went up now." A long period of silence above and below ensued. "I fancy," began the engineer, in a subdued voice, "that you mistrust Captain Mitchell's capitis." "Mistrust him?" muttered the doctor through his teeth. "I believe him capable of anything, even of the most absurd fidelity. I am the last person he spoke to before he left the wharf, you know. The poor woman up there wanted to see him, and I let him go up to her. The dying must not be contradicted, you know. She seemed then fairly calm and resigned, but the scoundrel in those 10 minutes or so has done, or said something which seems to have driven her into despair. You know," went on the doctor, hesitatingly, "women are so very unaccountable in every position, and at all times of life, that I thought sometimes she was in the way, don't you see? In love with him, the capitis. The rascal has his own charm indubitably, or he would not have made the conquest of all the populace of the town. No, no, I am not absurd. I may have given a wrong name to some strong sentiment for him on her part, to an unreasonable and simple attitude a woman is apt to take up emotionally towards a man. She used to abuse him to me frequently, which, of course, is not inconsistent with my idea. Not at all. It looked to me as if she were always thinking of him. He was something important in her life. You know, I have seen a lot of those people. Whenever I came down from the mine, Mrs. Gould used to ask me to keep my eye on them. She likes Italians, as he has lived a long time in Italy, I believe, and she took a special fancy to that old Garibaldino. A remarkable chap enough. A rugged and dreamy character, living in the republicanism of his young days, as if in a cloud. He has encouraged much of the capitalist's confounded nonsense, the high-strung, exalted old beggar." "What sort of nonsense?" wondered the chief engineer. "Found the capitalist always a very shrewd and sensible fellow, absolutely fearless, and remarkably useful. A perfect handy man. Sir John was greatly impressed by his resourcefulness and attention when he made that overland journey from Sta. Marta. Later on, as you might have heard, he rendered us a service by disclosing to the then chief of police the presence in the town of some professional thieves who came from a distance to wreck and rob our monthly pay train. He has certainly organized the lighterage service of the harbor for the O.S.S. and company with great ability. He knows how to make himself obeyed, foreigner though he is. It is true that the cargoers are strangers here too, for the most part immigrants, is Leno's. His prestige is his fortune," muttered the doctor, sourly. "The man has proved his trustworthiness up to the hilt on innumerable occasions, and in all sorts of ways," argued the engineer. When this question of the silver arose, Captain Mitchell naturally was very warmly of the opinion that his capitis was the only man fit for the trust. As a sailor, of course, I suppose so. But as a man, don't you know, Gould, Deckard, and myself judged that it didn't matter in the least who went. Any boatman would have done just as well. Pray, what could a thief do with such a lot of ingots? If he ran off with them, he would have in the end to land somewhere, and how could he conceal his cargo from the knowledge of the people ashore? We dismissed that consideration from our minds. Moreover, Deckard was going. There have been occasions when the capitis has been more implicitly trusted. He took a slightly different view, the doctor said. heard him declare in this very room that it would be the most desperate affair of his life. He made a sort of verbal will here in my hearing, appointing old Viola his executor. And, by Jove, do you know, he's not grown rich by his fidelity to you good people of the railway and the harbor. I suppose he obtained some, how do you say that? Some spiritual value for his labors, or else I don't know why the devil he should be faithful to you, Gould, Mitchell, or anybody else. He knows this country well. He knows, for instance, that Camacho, the deputy from Javira, has been nothing else but a tramposo of the commonest sort, a petty peddler of the campo, till he managed to get enough goods on credit from Anzani to open a little store in the wilds, and got himself elected by the drunken mozos that hang about the estancias and the poorest sort of rancheros who were in his debt. And Camacho, who tomorrow will be probably one of our high officials, is a stranger to Anzaleno. He might have been a cargador on the O.S. N. Wharf had he not, the posadero of Rincon is ready to swear it, murdered a peddler in the woods, and stolen his pack to begin life on. And do you think that Camacho, then, would have ever become a hero with the democracy of this place, like our capitas? Of course not. He isn't half the man. No, decidedly, I think that Nostromo is a fool. The doctor's talk was distasteful to the builder of railways. It is impossible to argue that point, he said, philosophically. Each man has his gifts. You should have heard Camacho haranguing his friends in the street. He has a howling voice, and he shouted like mad, lifting his clenched fist right above his head, and throwing his body half out of the window. At every pause the rabble below yelled, "Down with the oligarchs! Viva la libertad!" Apostrophe few and since I'd looked extremely miserable. You know, he is the brother of George Fuentes, who has been Minister of the Interior for 6 months or so, some few years back. Of course, he has no conscience, but he is a man of birth and education, at one time the director of the customs of Cayta. That idiot brute Camacho fastened himself upon him with his following of the lowest rabble. His sickly fear of that ruffian was the most rejoicing sight imaginable. He got up, and went to the door, to look out towards the harbor. "All quiet," he said. "I wonder if Sotillo really means to turn up here?" Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.